Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8, Lord Krishna Shows the Universal Form, text number 31. Evam drish yan yutsati kurute maga maha nandi vastau. Steyo payer viruchita kriti supratiko yataste. Itam sribi sa baya nayana shri mukhalo kini beer. Vyakya tarta prahasita muki nahi yupalobdum achi achchat. The word for word is as big as the purport. Evam, in this way, darishtyani, naughty activities, usati, in a neat and clean place, kurute, sometimes does, mehana adini, passing stool and urine, Pastau in our houses. Steya upayai, and by inventing different devices to steal butter and yogurt, butter and milk. Virachita kriti is very expert. Supratika is now sitting down here like a very good, well-behaved child. Yathaste, while sitting here, staying here, I'm sorry. Itam, all these topics of conversation. Stribi, by the gopis. Sabaya Nayana. Just now sitting there with fearful eyes. Streamuga. Such a beautiful face. Alokinibi. By the gopis who are enjoying the pleasure of seeing. Vyakyata artha, and while complaining against him before Mother Jasoda. Prahasita mukai, they were smiling and enjoying. Na, not he, indeed. Upalabdum, to chastise and threaten. Rather, she enjoyed how Krishna was sitting there as a very good boy. Aichat, she desired. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When Krishna is caught in his naughty activities, the master of the house would say to him, "Oh, you are a thief," and artificially express anger at him. Krishna then replied, "I'm not a thief, you're a thief." Sometimes being angry, Krishna would pass urine and stool in a night in a neat, clean place in our houses. But how our dear friend, Jasoda. This expert thief is sitting before you like a very good boy. Sometimes all the gopis would look at Krishna sitting there, his eyes fearful, so that his mother would not chastise him. And when they saw Krishna's beautiful face, instead of chastising him, they would simply look at it upon his face and enjoy transcendental bliss. Mother Jasoda would mildly smile at all of this fun, and she would not want to chastise her blessed transcendental child. Purport. Krishna's business in the neighborhood was not only to steal, but sometimes to pass stool and urine in a neat, clean house. When caught by the master of the house, Krishna would chastise him, saying, "You're a thief." Aside from being a thief in his childhood affairs, Krishna acted as an expert thief when he was very young, attracting young girls and enjoying them in the Rasa dance. This is Krishna's business. He's also violent as the killer of many demons. Although mundane people like nonviolence and other brilliant qualities, God, the absolute truth, being always the same, is good in any activities, even so-called immoral activities like stealing, killing, and violence. Krishna is always pure and is always the supreme absolute truth. Krishna may do anything supposedly abominable in material life, yet still he is attractive. Therefore his name is Krishna, meaning all attractive. This is the platform on which transcendent loving affairs and service are exchanged. Because of the features of Krishna's face, the mothers were so attracted that they could not chastise him. Instead of chastising him, they smiled and enjoyed hearing of Krishna's activities. Thus the gopis remained satisfied and Krishna enjoyed their happiness. Therefore another name of Krishna is Gopi Janavallabha, because he invented such activities to please the gopis. Generally we think of the 10th canto as a place of the rasa dance and Krishna having affairs with the unmarried or the married gopis in the Parakya rasa. But actually, other parts of the 10th canto, or even the Srimad Bhagavatam, deal with things like Krishna is a thief. Krishna is a killer. Krishna passes stolen urine in nice, neat places. So these are things not generally an ordinary person who thinks, Abhijananti mamuda manushim tanuma shrityam Parambhava majananta mamabhuta maheshwaram. Krishna says, the fools, they deride at my descending in this human-like form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. So generally speaking, when we hear that someone's passing urine stool and we hear that they're God, we wonder what kind of God passes urine stool. But we have the example of Maharaj Shavdev. He also passed stool and urine and used to stay in that area. But his urine and stool were aromatic for 70 miles around. We can't probably say the same thing for ourselves or anyone else we know. So that's the difference between transcendence and material. They have two different natures. That here it says, Ordva malama dakshakam, ashvatam prahor aviyam, chadamsi yasya parnani, yas tvam veda saveda. That there's a banyan tree, has its roots upward and its branches are down, and the Vedic hymns are its leaves. That one who knows this tree is said to be the knower of the Vedas. Therefore, one of the first things we're supposed to understand that this world is a reflection of the real world. In this world, whatever is going on is a perverted reflection of reality. Why? Because the conditioned soul has come here and wants to imitate Radha and Krishna. And of course, Radha and Krishna or we could say Krishna in general, but especially Radha and Krishna, because the Adi Ras, from which all other rasas come from, is sex life. So the original sex, because Krishna is male and Srimati Radharani is female, the original sex life is between Krishna and Radha, or Radha and Krishna. Of course, that sex life is completely different from the sex life in the material world, where there's loss of energy, bewilderment, more illusion, whatever else. And in the spiritual world, it's the gain of energy. The whole universe is all material and spiritual universes are all gaining energy through the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the gopis. Because they enjoy not in the same way as the material, one has a gross and subtle material body. They enjoy transcendentally because their very happiness, their very feelings of wanting to please others, their very service attitude of love produces enjoyment. They don't need anything else. All they do is have to love. If the gopis, Hedabhai Srimati Radharani, are simply thinking of how to please Krishna, that in itself comes out of their hearts, out of their very being, out of their essence, which is transcendental and spiritual, and it's full of bliss, full of pleasure. The very desire to please Krishna is full of pleasure. Now that same pleasure, that same desire can be within us also. It's just it's covered, or sometimes it's mixed up with other desires. In other words, yes, I want to please Krishna, and I also want something back from Krishna. So it's not we're taking one step forward and one step back. But in the pure heart of the gopis and Srimati Radharani and the coward boys and the residents of Vrindavan, their only desire is to please Krishna. Now we may wonder, how is this possible that anyone could have a desire only to please someone else? Well, it just so happens that eternally we're in the same position. We may think that our main desire in the material world is to please ourselves, but we do it through pleasing this body and the gross and subtle body. So also, we also have an object of love and devotion, our body, gross and subtle, that we're always trying to please. Please in the sense that vacha vegam, manasakrodha vegam, jiva vegam, udrapasta vegam, etan vegam, yova sheheta dira, sarvam apimam prativim sasishat. That, there's the vachaveg, the desire to speak. So everyone wants to speak, but generally we're speaking about the glories of the material existence, either good or bad, what's going on here, called gramyakata. So we have this urge to tell others, did you see, did you read about this, did you hear about this pandemic, this war, this cheating, this wonderful dance, this soccer game, did you hear about it, did you see it? And everyone goes, yeah, wow, that's far out. We're looking for something to absorb our minds in and enjoy in the material world. And of course, for most people, it used to be sex life, but there's a whole group of people getting tired of that. So now it's soccer, or now it's their dog. If you go on the internet, there's as much videos about dogs and animals than there are about people. So people want to, they're focusing their attention and then giving their appreciation, which we can call love, to something outside the actual soul, which means everything outside the soul in this material world. Their gross and subtle bodies and things in relationship to the gross and subtle body. Everyone is focusing their attention and giving their feelings towards, their love, their appreciation, So this is normal. Originally, that love and appreciation, that attention went to Krishna. And when it goes to Krishna, the soul senses can actually be satisfied. Because Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure, and Krishna's reciprocation, Krishna's appreciation for our love, when we feel his love, it's much greater than our love. It's full, much greater bliss than we can imagine. Unlimitedly more love and bliss than our little bit of bliss and love that we can convey to Krishna. Although Krishna appreciates it even more than he appreciates his own feelings of love. That's Krishna's power, that because he's unlimited, he can take a little something and make it unlimited also. Unlimitedly appreciate it. Therefore, these hearing about Krishna's pastimes should be done usually in relationship to what we have faith in, that we can actually appreciate. Now, without spiritual senses, a normal person, without, of course, we have spiritual senses, but when our spiritual senses are covered, when we hear that Krishna's a thief, when we hear that he's a womanizer, when we hear that he has bodily functions like an ordinary human being, then we think normally a normal person, an average person, a conditioned soul, will think of Krishna as an ordinary person, just like I am. Maybe a little bit more powerful, but after all, he has the same tendencies I have. He just has more ability to manifest them. That's called Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam, an ordinary person would have to think that actually Bhagavatam, most of it is just Srila Vyasadeva sitting there alone in the Himalayas, having nothing to do, looking around, finding some plants, trying them out, and in his hallucinations came up with a Bhagavatam. And he had said, he took some, the intoxication back then was so good, the stories were quite exceptional. But now he came to the 10th canto, Shukadeva Goswami comes, and they weren't in the Himalayas, but somehow or another, Shukadeva Goswami will talk about Krishna, the Aborigine cowboy. So if we go to India, we'll find that many people, they know Krishna. If you say, please take this book, it's about Krishna, and they go, I know everything about Krishna. What they mean is, I know Krishna's a thief, he's a womanizer, he breaks his promises. They know Krishna, but they, a lot of them, they worship Krishna because they'd like to be like Krishna. Krishna had 16,108 wives, so therefore Krishna is worshipable. Not because he's God, but because he has such a big power to enjoy. That's what they want. They think Krishna has 16,108 wives because he was unlimitedly lusty. Because he was lusty, I should say. And Prabhupada said, yes, he was lusty, but he was unlimitedly lusty. No one can imitate him. Maybe someone can live with a few wives simultaneously, but no one can live with 16,108 simultaneously. Therefore, Krishna can't be an ordinary person. There must be something extraordinary about him. In any case, 10th canto is really not the place to start. Because we'll read it like, if we read the Bhagavatam and we hear about the boar incarnation, the tortoise incarnation, the half man, half lion, we're already in the thinking that this is imagination. What to speak when we get to this? We think, well, maybe it's not imagination. Maybe our hero is a lusty guy, thief, murderer. And therefore, when we think, I thought I came here to become good, but I find out my leader is pretty mean guy. Therefore, one may become even more confused and already confused. And of course, after some time, people read the Bhagavad Gita and they think that this is boring. He keeps on telling me that I'm not this body. I already heard that a million times. They tell me that this person, there's a person who created this universe, and they tell us ultimately that Krishna did it, and then we find out Krishna's a thief. He runs around with other people's women, wives. He steals. He lies. He kills. Therefore, we wonder, no wonder bad things happen to good people here. Because the leader is actually a villain. Especially in Kali Yuga, when good people have disappeared, practically speaking, and all the heroes are all just like Krishna. They're womenizers, they're killers, they're thieves. And therefore, people don't, hearing these pastimes, they generally don't get any better. They don't make any improvement because they actually wind up criticizing Krishna when they hear about it. They wind up blaspheming Krishna. Or ultimately becoming impersonalist. That it doesn't really matter whatever you do. If you're on the absolute platform, you can do anything you want. Because after all, at the end of life, you just merge into Brahman and no one can. If you owe people money, it's very hard for them to follow you there to collect it. Besides that, what are they going to get out of you in Brahman? You don't have anything. You're just glowing. So the conclusion is we have to be careful that we understand these pastimes properly and not think that we've understood them or we know what's going on. Otherwise, we'll just equate our material existence, whatever we're experiencing here, we'll just interpose our own personal experience on these pastimes. Consciously or unconsciously. Of course, usually we don't do it consciously, but we have nothing else as reference, unless we're liberated souls, to understand what's going on. If these gopis are experiencing, practically speaking, an ocean of happiness and love, then we actually have to at least accept that that's what we're experiencing and then approach it from that point of view and try to feel what they're feeling in the most positive way possible. And then we can get something out of the pastimes. But if we don't do that, we don't make a conscious effort of trying to just take whatever experience we have, love and happiness, and try to apply it to these pastimes, then we all have to automatically apply our own material conception of people who are thieves, who are, you know, doing things which are not desirable, and then therefore we'll start criticizing Krishna too subtly. Well, why did he pass stool in a clean place? Why did he pinch little babies? Couldn't he pick on someone his own size? Why does he steal like that? If he went up and asked for it, wouldn't they give it to him? Are they so greedy in Vrindavan? They wouldn't give a little boy some milk. He has to steal it. What kind of people are these anyhow? And not only that, Krishna is stealing yogurt and butter and milk all over Vrindavan, and they can never stop him. No law and order, whatever, in Vrindavan. No protection. Demons come all the time. And they harass people. What would it be like to live in Vrindavan? You got bulls, where the tails are touching the mountains. His horns are in the clouds. How peaceful can you live in Vrindavan? Thinking another day, another demon is going to come and harass us. And if we have any milk in our house, Krishna's going to come and steal it. So unless we have the proper attitude, the proper vision, the proper perspective of what's going on here, We might get misled sometimes by our minds, by our own previous experiences, and not appreciate as much as we could what actually the glory of this 10th canto is. So in that mind, in the mind, we just have to be a little careful and at least be neutral, understand Krishna is God, as it says here, in any circumstance, and it's just due to our lack of purity, our lack of elevation to the transcendental platform, that we can't understand, experience what's actually going on here, so we could actually understand it. But that will come if we just follow the principles, chant Hare Krishna, try to spread this movement, and don't introduce people to this 10th canto right away. You can introduce them to the Krishna book, that's all right. But don't try to explain to them these technicalities that we ourselves would be very hard-pressed to understand. A little service to Krishna, to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a little bit of appreciation that we're eternal, that itself will go a long way. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes. Now we have the pastime with the microphone. Okay.
Thank you very much for lecture, Maharaj. So I wonder, like, it's written that whoever hears about Krishna, chants about Krishna, appreciates only once, it's in all sinful reactions. Like, so I wonder whether this means.
Have you ever? Yeah.
This means literally, or this is just, it might happen.
Well, that's explained in the Nectar of Devotion. There are many things that are mentioned. If you clap your hands before the deities, all the sins go away, just like the birds fly out of a tree when they hear the clapping. If you take Charanamrita, then all the sins, past sins are... So Prabhupada writes in the purport that there are many things that are glorified in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And these have been experienced by some people, but not by everyone. But they're given as examples in order to encourage them to perform them. Now, the result we get from anything is the consciousness that we enter into the activity. Now, we have a limited amount of possibilities to be Krishna conscious. So therefore, we do have a maximum. In other words, we have an ability to meditate upon Krishna, to visualize and remember him, to remember to do it out of devotion, with appreciation, etc. So we can enter into the any activity with full, as much as knowledge and expertise as we can, so that we can get the full benefit from it. But there's going to be a limit. We don't have, you know, purified senses, we don't have purified experience. But we try the best we can. But the worst thing is to just think it's imagination, and therefore become indifferent to it. As, you know, just do it as a ritual. And then we won't get any benefit from it. As a matter of fact, it works the opposite way. It makes our heart harder. And the very thing that can liberate us becomes the source of our bondage. Anything else? We have about 30 seconds of silence now. An exercise. Kuala Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.